Life is strange, but I don't need to tell any of you that. 9 years ago, my friend Jack Webster sent me an audio file from March 1975, where he interviewed an up-and-coming racer by the name of Harry Talbot Chip Mead. Jack sent me the file as my family just got done restoring Chip's 1981 All-American Racers Eagle Cosworth that he raced on the kart circuit in 1981 and 1982, scoring a few top 10 finishes but never obtaining his ultimate goal of making the Indianapolis 500. He was the first alternate in 1982, and in 81 he was quick enough to make the 500 but had fourth gear stripped from the car during his third qualifying lap. On March 31st, 1993, Chip was killed in a private plane crash in Livermore, California. He was survived by his wife Caroline, his mother Mary, his brothers Dan, George, Whit, Dudley, and his sister Mimi. When we started the restoration of Chip's Eagle in 2008, I got in touch with many of Chip's family and his friends, all of whom said Chip lived life to the fullest. His races in the IMSA Lite category saw one of the bravest drivers around push the baby fab car Porsches to their limit, often placing well and showing the world what a team from Dayton, Ohio could do. During his lifetime, he had two stints in Formula Ford competition, first racing a 1972 March in IMSA's Formula Ford series that year, and later with a 1980 Zinc Z10 that he raced at a Formula Ford Pro Series event at IRP. The Citation was owned by Skip McCusker, who soon sold the car to Chip and Larry Connor. It was Z10 chassis number 1 and currently resides in Australia. So again, thank you to Jack Webster for doing this interview back in 1975 and for letting me show it to the world today. And cheers, Chip.
Make sure it's working. All right. So what I want to start with is a little bit about you. How long you been in the Formula Atlantic series? What'd you race before the Formula Atlantic? How long you've been involved in racing, etc. Let's just start where you've been so far in racing.
Well, I could go pretty far back. I started when I was about 10 years old racing go-karts.
Yeah?
And go-kart racing was really big around here. And I raced for about 4 years. And I went away to school in the East, boarding school.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was 18 when I graduated from boarding school, and I started riding dirt bikes. I lived in Arizona for a while and did some desert racing. I came back here and went to business school and raced motocross. And ran into a friend of mine. Well, I made friends with the guy around here named Jeff Freeman. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, he had just gotten a March distributorship from Grimaldi and got excited about road racing. And in 72, I bought a March Formula Ford. And it was delayed in shipment practically a whole summer. It was still being built.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the first Fords that March built. And so I borrowed a Formula V from him and went through driving school. And a couple of regionals in the summer of 72, and got my Ford in the fall of 72. And then in the winter, that winter, he got the Chevron importership. And so I got a Chevron Formula V car, V25, mm-hmm. before I even had my national license.
Mm. This is still 72?
End of 72, okay. Beginning of 73. And so the spring of 73, I finished off my regionals and got my national license with the Formula B car. And about three nationals into 73, I discovered the Player Series in Canada. Because
mm-hmm.
I had met James King previous in 72.
Mm-hmm.
And we became pretty good friends, and he was running the Player Series, so I went up with him. And ended up 73 running Mossport, Sin Air, Pro Formula B race at Elkhart Lake, Three Rivers, and a Pro B race at Watkins Glen.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really did just enough regionals to get my national license, which I immediately transferred to FIA, and then I started running the Pro races in the Formula B car. And then in the fall of 73, James and I decided to run a team together.
Mm-hmm. That was the Eon
right.
Synthetic World.
And he thought he could find a sponsor, and I was pretty good friends with Doug Shearson because he was my instructor in my driving school.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just lost the marathon importership. and wanted to remain in racing, so he offered to put up his shop and his transporter and all of the spares he had left over from the 2-liter cars. I don't know if you remember when he ran two 2-liter cars, Bill Barber. And they swapped with the new Chevron Formula B car, the 74 Chevron Formula B car. So in the winter of 74, we put the deal together, and James and Doug and I flew to England and picked up our new Atlantic cars to Chevron B27s and ran about 4 races of the Player Series in England.
Mm-hmm.
And we did really well over there.
The
first race we were in was at Mallory Park in the rain, and James qualified on the front row third, and I qualified inside of the second row fourth.
Oh.
And
first race with the new cars.
Yeah.
First time at the track too.
Yeah. And then we ran the race at Brands Hatch, the race of champions. And I rode the car off against the Armco. James was leading the race, and I was running about sixth. And then he did another race, and my car got repaired. And then we did some testing with Brian Redman, and he helped us sort our cars. And then we came over and just strictly did the Player Series in Canada, all of 74. And the U.S. Pro races, of which it was just Elkhart and Watkins Glen.
Mm-hmm. So what was your best finish in 74?
There were 3 pro races in the States. I had a third at Waterford behind Klausler and Muzzin. And I had a third at Elkhart Lake behind Klausler and Mike Hall. And in the Players Series, I had 1 6th place finish and 4 7th place finishes, and the rest were DNFs. I crashed the car a lot that year.
Mm-hmm. And this year?
Well, over the winter, last year Doug was approached by the March factory to pick up the importer ship.
Mm-hmm.
And over the winter he finalized the deal and went into partnership with Grimaldi and took over the March importer ship. And we sold off our Chevrons, and I wanted to stay with Doug, and he wanted me to run out of the shop. So I, towards the spring, found a sponsor and got him to get me a new March Atlantic car. And I did sort of an independent effort with the mechanic that worked on my car in 74, working on my car, the new March. And I basically run out of his shop and most of the time tow the car to the track myself and back and just meet the mechanic at the track, or have him ride with me from the shop to the track. And I work on the car in the shop with the mechanic, and he just prepares it for me. And in turn, I just split, you know, expenses with Doug, shop overhead and mechanic's wages and stuff like that. But had a lot of problem adjusting from the Chevron to the March, because I had run the Chevron in 73, the B25, and in 74, the B27. And they were pretty much
quite a bit of
similar cars.
In the March and the Chevron.
And then I switched to the March, and there was a tremendous difference.
In setting the car up, or
everything,
handling? Everything.
Everything. A much different car to drive.
Which did you like better?
Well, the Chevron was an extremely easy car to drive, but it didn't handle that well.
Mm-hmm.
It was a, you know, it'd be easy for anybody to step into a Chevron and be a midfield runner.
Mm-hmm.
But once you got down to those tenths of seconds that you needed to get in the front,
so far,
it just didn't get it. And the March, on the other hand, is an extremely difficult car to drive. It took me a long, long time to set up. And I really fell on my face the first 3 races of the Players Series. And then from about Mossport on, you know, it's consistently been a very quick car.
Mm-hmm.
I finally learned, you know, what changes make the car work and what changes correct certain problems with the car. And, you know, you get to a point where you can only drive so hard and the rest of it's got to be in the car, you know.
Yeah. So, on the circuits in the Formula Atlantic series, what's your favorite circuit on the Canadian series? you'll have to put it in either the most fun to drive or the most satisfying.
Either Mossport or Three Rivers.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, Three Rivers, looking at Three Rivers, just looking at it, you know, not driving it, but for me, looking at the circuit, it looks like it's the kind of circuit where you really can't afford to make even a small mistake, or you end up paying for it by tearing a wheel off the car or something like that. It seems it's narrow in spots, and then you got those ominous concrete walls there.
Well, actually, it isn't. Actually, the track is wider than most any track that I've ever run on account of it's run through streets and it's on boulevards.
Mm-hmm.
And
the back straight's rather wide.
Right. Well, all of the track is really pretty wide. I mean, compared to the Glen or Elkhart Lake or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that, with, say, Elkhart Lake, you've got the runoff area on the side of the pavement, so
right.
It looks wider.
Right.
But in actual pavement width, I think the Three Rivers is probably the widest track I've ever run on. But I finished 4th in 73 at Three Rivers, and 7th in 74, and I have a lot of confidence in the track.
Yeah, you were running 7th this year.
Yeah, and you kind of get to a point where you take a really realistic attitude of what's going to happen. A lot of times, due to my inexperience, having only raced for about 3 years now, I'll shy away from a really fast circuit, because a mistake or a suspension failure or something will, be dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
But at 73, or at Three Rivers, I know that there's no turn you can get in trouble on where you're going to get hurt. The worst you can do is bang up the car.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems to be
right.
Relatively safe that way, because the turns right. Where the wall does seem close, it's generally they did improve it this year too. They had the higher crash fencing in some of the areas, and they also had the tires at the end of those runoff areas that weren't there last
right.
year.
And they took away some of the concrete walls and turned them into grassy runoff areas,
yeah.
Which is nice. But, a lot of people have trouble differentiating between a corner on a track where you're going to go off and get hurt and a corner on a track where you're just going to go off and damage the car.
Mm-hmm.
To a lot of people, just going off or just making a mistake is a real tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But then you get to a point where you can differentiate between what's going to cause you real trouble and what's just going to be a damage to the car situation.
Yeah, well, the racing in that Formula Atlantic series, just from seeing that one race, is so close, so wheel to wheel almost all the time. Is it like that in all the races? And they bring over some of the Formula One guys for the Three Rivers race. But are there 30 car grids in most of the series?
Yeah, the whole series. Actually, Three Rivers was probably the least competitive of all the races in Canada.
Really?
I mean, the drivers were a lot better with the Formula One drivers, but the pole position at Three Rivers was 105.3, and the last position on the grid was a 109-something, so there was near a 4-second spread there.
Mm-hmm.
And in most of the players' races, we'll qualify 30 or 40 cars within 2 seconds of each other.
Well, I'm used to seeing this year. I'm used to seeing the Formula 5000. Sure. You're used to seeing
sure.
18, 20 cars go out and qualify in a 10, 15-second spread exactly. between pole and last position on the grid.
Like for instance at Vancouver, the second race of the Players' Series, I qualified 1.8 seconds off of the pole, and I had to run the consolation race to qualify mm-hmm. for the feature. I think at Three Rivers, the Formula One drivers that were over there added that element, of expertise that made them far enough out in front to widen that spread.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think if they hadn't been there, the spread would have been a lot closer.
Does Molson pay for bringing them over just for that one race?
Well, the promoters of the race do. They it's kind of, everybody up there has mixed emotions. Some people think that, downstairs, so. Some people think that it's really good that we get a chance to run against people like that so we can evaluate ourselves on an overall scale thing.
Mm-hmm.
And other people think that they ought to just put the prize money up, you know, for the Atlantic drivers that are over here and not import any of these guys.
Well, how's the prize money at Three Rivers compared to the prize money at the other tracks? In other words,
good and bad. It's top heavy. It's really top heavy, like
the Eastern races or the
like Three Rivers pays $10,000 for first prize.
Right, and then it falls way off.
Right.
I mean, like what was it, 15th position and down was $50.
Right.
From the $10,000 first prize, and it drops rapidly.
Like
nothing.
If you finish fifth in a player's race, you can make about $1,700. But if you finish fifth at Three Rivers, you only make $1,000.
Yeah.
You know, so.
How do they score points in the players' series? Down how far?
They score points down to 15th place. And it's kind of a weird point spread. It's something like 32 for first and 24 for second and 18 for third.
Mm-hmm. And Brack won a championship for the third time and just won one race.
Yeah, well, the races were so competitive that almost every race, a different person won and different people finished in the top three, which is where the heavy points are.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point spread was so great that by finishing second and third a couple of times, he managed to remain in the top five.
Yeah.
And going into the last race, any one of the top five competitors, which were Klausler, Roos was leading, Forrest Robinson was second, Brack was third, Klausler was fourth, and Villeneuve was fifth. And any one of them, by winning and having other competitors finish in a certain position, could have won. And
I'll tell you, I think it's a phenomenal series, as from a spectator's point of view, as far as competition and excitement. I mean, the cars themselves are exciting. They sound like Formula One cars. They look, you know, they handle. They have a refined handling to them compared to a 5,000 car, which just is like an open-wheeled Can-Am car almost. It's just raw power, and then most of the time the guys don't get to use all that power. And the competition, road racing now in the States is so lopsided that why isn't the States SCCA or IMSA? Why didn't IMSA or SCCA run a professional Formula Atlantic race series?
Well, I could probably talk bad about SCCA for a couple of days.
There's no, it's most of the people I've talked to have that same feeling about SCCA.
There's no love lost between the Atlantic competitors and the SCCA.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the SCCA tends to be too star-oriented.
Mm-hmm. When you look at the 5,000 series, it's Redmond and Andretti, and they might as well run a race. Yeah, they might as well run a race for those two or three cars, and then run a race and let everybody else drive.
Exactly.
And the way they run the races too, the two heat system, when you only got 20 cars that show up to qualify for a race.
Yeah.
When you go to the Atlantic race, and there's 32 cars starting a final race, which is long enough where enough things happen, it keeps the spectators happy, and they see a hell of a lot of racing and a lot of close battles.
Imagine the spectators had a real heyday at Three Rivers watching
That is a very enthusiastic crowd up there.
Yeah, it is.
That is fantastic.
Yeah, well, Canada, you know, from place to place it varies, but for the most part, the crowds are really enthusiastic. You know, if there's a change in position, you know, for the lead or for second or for third, you know, the crowd's on their feet cheering and throwing stuff in the air and yelling, and they got banners for their favorite drivers strung up and stuff. And,
yeah, phenomenal.
You know, I went to the 5,000 race in Mid-Ohio, and people just sat around and drank beer, and, you know,
it was like in the 5,000, in the Camel GT all year, too. It's just an open and shut case. Either he's going to win or he's going to win, you know.
Yeah.
And, the most exciting race, other than this race at Three Rivers, was the Camel GT at Mosport when Schaefer was leading all the way through until the very end.
I heard about that, and Haywood won right at the end.
Yeah, and that had the crowd on its feet.
Yeah, Haywood and I went to school together in the East.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Long time ago. I drove Camel GT in 73. I drove Dan Fury's old Mustang.
Oh.
And drove Daytona, Pocono, Mid-Ohio. couple of races. Got to like the IMSA people pretty much.
Yeah, they seem to be a little more flexible in their program. Really. They seem to be doing a little more for the drivers.
Actually, I first met them in the fall of 72. I ran my Formula Ford in the IMSA race at Daytona in December. And really got enthusiastic about IMSA.
What do you think of the possibility of IMSA in the future setting up a Formula Atlantic series?
They've been sniffing at it for a year or two. John and Peggy Bishop were up at Three Rivers. But John Bishop's never really been a Formula car freak, you know? And
well, he's got a nice thing with that Camel GT series.
Yeah, he really does.
He has knack with sponsorship, which SCCA just seems to just blow all over the place all the time.
Exactly. You know, I talked to Larry Dent and a couple other guys who were here in town for the last SCCA meeting, and I asked them what the possibility was of them putting together an Atlantic series, because I know SCCA has been kind of talking about it. And they said, well, it takes kind of a low priority because they're still looking for sponsorship to revive the Can-Am series. And they're looking for a sponsor for the 5000 series, and they're looking for a sponsor for the Trans-Am series. And there's absolutely no question in my mind but that the Atlantic series in Canada is the most competitive race and the best value for the spectator dollar, the best value for the promoter's dollar, best value for the sponsor's dollar. You know, it's just incredible that they ignore it.
Most of the Atlantic races this year televised?
Every single one.
Yeah. I didn't notice there was. Last year, Three Rivers was televised, and this year it wasn't.
I talked to the TV people, and they were having some sort of pre-Olympic games in Montreal. And the network went down to cover that instead of Three Rivers. But Players contracts with a group called Chetwynd Films to do all their TV shows, and their film company was at Three Rivers, and they were doing a couple of driver profiles and a documentary on the race. It wasn't a full-fledged coverage.
Yeah, it wasn't like live coverage, but right. They are going to do a show on it.
Yeah.
That would make, I'd say, Canadian racing on a comparison basis with European racing as far as the spirit of the whole thing, the crowds, the sponsors, the organizers, compared to American racing, which seems kind of stagnated right now.
Yeah, that's true. It really is. You know, I mean, American promoters and the SCCA are scraping the bottom of the barrel to put on a good racing show for the people, like this handicap race at Elkhart Lake.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of friends of mine were up for that, and they said, you know, there were 5-year-old McLaren Can-Am cars and clapped out Corvettes and Cobras and a couple of nice 2-liter cars. And, you know, they're just throwing junk on the track for the spectators. And, you know, the race and road racing is going to start losing popularity unless they do something in the States like they're doing in Canada. For instance, the Three Rivers race, where they bring race, or Long Beach, where they're bringing the races to the people. But still, I don't know.
They'll take the 5000 series out there, and it'll be just like it has been all season. They might, probably a few more cars will show up because it's going to be a big deal out there. It's televised and all that. You'll probably see the spare cars pulled out. I hear Jarier is going to drive out there in the shadow. But overall, you just look overall at American. Look at the attendance figures at the American Tracks. The Glen, it's the 6-hour and the 5000 race. It's less than half of what it was last year.
Right.
And Mosport was down to almost half of what it was last year when they had the Camel GT and the 5000 race up there.
Last year, there was a bigger crowd for the players' race at Mosport than there was this year for the 5000 race.
And I was at the biggest joke of the year was the 5000 race in Pocono.
Yeah.
On the original race date in May, that was canceled because of the rain. There couldn't have been more than 1,000 people there on both days. There were 5000 races. Freddie Redmond, Bobby Unser, Al Unser, all those guys there, and just 1,000 people show up to see the race.
Yeah, I'll tell you something interesting. I had dinner at Three Rivers with Bob Hanna and Rob Tanner, who run the player series. And they said that, first thing they said, which really surprised me, was that it looks dubious for the 5000 series in the States next year.
Oh, really?
I don't know if, you know, they're just listening to what they want to hear because they like Atlantic cars or if it's really a fact. And the second thing, which is really encouraging, they're 95% of the way towards signing a 14-show TV series on the Atlantic series for next year, and 6 races will be held in the States and 8 in Canada.
Oh,
and if that comes about, to be a good series in the States. And right now, there's more Atlantic cars and professional teams prepared to run Atlantic than there are 5,000 Camel GT, Super V.
How about cost? How much does it cost? How much does an Atlantic car cost, a competitive car? How much does it cost to maintain, approximately, that car for a season?
Well, ballpark estimate of what it costs for a season at Atlantic is around $50,000. It can be more if you're stupid, and it can be less if you're smart.
But for instance, what's an engine cost?
Engines are right around $5,000.
Okay, versus $10,000 for a 5,000.
Or more, yeah.
Or more, yeah.
But by the same token, if you have a good engine builder, or you are a good engine builder, you can buy a Cosworth kit from Cosworth for about $3,000 and build it yourself.
Okay.
You know, and then you've got to put a...
How far between rebuilds?
They're getting really good now. The first couple of years, it was kind of... maybe every weekend, every other weekend, but now we're going 3 and 4 races between rebuilds. I have a spare engine that I've carried all year that I haven't even used.
I don't think too many people in 5,000 racing can say that.
The engine that I used at Three Rivers, which I consider to be one of the strongest engines out there, was really pulling well. It's the same engine I used for Mossport and the same engine I used for Halifax. And in the Atlantic Series, when we go to a track, we'll have testing on Thursday, as much time as we want. And then Friday, we'll have open practice from 12 to 5 in the afternoon. Saturday, we'll have 3 one-hour qualifying sessions. Sunday, we'll have a 2-hour practice in the morning, and then a 15-minute warm-up, and then an hour and a half long race. So on the average, we run 5, 6, 7 hours a weekend on the motors. And to go 15, 18 hours between rebuilds,
that's phenomenal. And how about a rolling chassis?
Rolling chassis are going up each year by a lot. In 73, a rolling chassis was about $8,500. In 74, it was right near 10,000. And this year, my March retailed is a roller for $13,900, and I understand for 76 they're going to be up around $15,000 for a roller. But for 75, I don't know exactly what the new prices are going to be, but for this past season, spare wheels, spare noses, one motor, and a rolling chassis, right around $20,000.
Okay, so you're $50,000 running this series,
yeah.
Is excluding...
Including. Yeah.
Including the car.
Yeah.
And a spare engine?
Okay. Including, say you got about $25,000 in equipment, okay. And then you're looking at $20,000 in running expenses. You know, the race entry fees are around $150 a race. You multiply that times 10. You know, your engine rebuilds run rounded off to $1,000. Really $700, and you're looking at half a dozen of those for a season. Your insurance is $300 a race. You know, your motel and gas for the weekends maybe $400 a weekend. You know, you can ballpark it between $45 and $50, something like that. But by the same token, that's probably the best investment in racing you can make with your money, because the prize money that comes back in relationship to the money you put in is really good. You know, like in 5,000 you can win $14,000 in a race, but for the season it costs $150,000 to run.
Right.
You know, where the Atlantic Series, like at Three Rivers, you can win $10,000 in a race and it costs one third of what a 5,000 car costs to run, or less.
Yeah. What about your
goals in racing? Right now, your, say, immediate goals, the next one, the next 2 years in racing.
Well, for the next... for the next year or two, I'm going to concentrate pretty much on the Atlantic Series, because I reckon if you can run up front in the Atlantic Series, you can run up front just about in any series you want to race in. Mm-hmm. You know, take Three Rivers, for instance. If I had been able to work my way to the front of the race and win the race over people like Charrier and right. Depailler and Brambilla, there would be no question in anybody's mind in the international racing fraternity
that
I was a competent driver. You know, and I don't think that there's any other series. There's practically no other series in the world that can offer that.
That's right. That doesn't give you that opportunity to race right with
exactly
the Formula One guys or Formula Two guys. And what from Atlantic then? Stepping stone into European racing, or
well,
are you thinking that far ahead yet?
No, I'm thinking that far ahead. I've been sniffing around at 5,000 because I have some opportunities to get good sponsorship in this country, and unfortunately, really unfortunately, 5,000 is where it's at in this country.
Yeah.
Aside from Indianapolis, which, you know. But I would really like, from a driver's standpoint, I think the most beneficial step would be to run Formula 2 in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a good possibility in the next couple of years they're going to change Formula 2 to Atlantic specifications. So Atlantic will be a universal formula. It will be U.S., England, and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be no more, you know, before it was F2, Atlantic, and Formula B.
Mm-hmm.
They combined Formula B and Atlantic. They combined Formula 2 and Atlantic. Then I think you're going to have, by far and away, the most competitive series going.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll all be able to go over to Europe to race.
Right.
And, you know, right now in Canada, just you take any player's grid, you know, from Vancouver, Edmonton, any of the races, and you got Formula One drivers, Dave Walker, Damon McGee, you know, people like this, you know, John Nicholson from England, you know, you got really good people. You know, like in the first race, you know, I'd sit on the grid and look around me, and you know, next to me would be Brett Lund, right behind me would be John Woodner, right in front of me would be, you know, Dave Walker, or Damon McGee, or somebody like that.
Yeah, and then and now you look and see McGee's going into Formula One, and Lunger's going into Formula One.
Exactly. Well, McGee was, yeah, he was in Formula One, but
I hear he's going to be driving with Martin Rossi, Brabham.
Well, he was signed. That's... yeah, he was signed by Bernie Ecclestone to a contract to drive Brabham's. But I think he's going to run the two North American GPs in a BRM.
Well, forget the Canadian. It's off. Have you heard that yet?
Well, I heard it was off, and I heard they're going to hold a race, but they don't know what kind of cars are going to run the race.
The latest I heard this past weekend was that the race, the Canadian Grand Prix, is off entirely as a Formula One race of any sort.
Right.
And they're just going to run a Formula...
Libra.
Yeah, Formula Ford race up there, and I guess the word's going out to the spectators who bought those advance tickets that they can get their money back right now, and it's going to be a freebie race.
Mike. Another stinger and another draft, yeah. I was kind of hoping that they'd run an Atlantic race.
So was I. I was kind of hoping that. I'd love to see that.
You know,
I guess you had miserable weather up there this year for the Atlantic race. I was talking to a friend of mine who was there, and he said, oh, the crowd was down because the weather forecast for the whole weekend was so bad. He said, of course he went. So he said it was miserable weather. That seems to be the worst thing about motorsport.
Well, I've run there three times, 72, twice, 73 once, and this is the first time I've ever really encountered that kind of stuff. I'd heard about it, but... boy, it was bad news.
Did you have fog and rain?
Yeah.
Oh, God, when they get a fog, they get 72 O's up there for the Grand Prix, and they had a fog that didn't lift until 3:30 in the afternoon.
Well,
and it looked as though it might be the first time a Formula One race was ever canceled because of weather conditions.
Well, they said if the fog didn't lift by 7, they were going to cancel the race, and the fog lifted at quarter after six in the evening. And then, of course, there was the farce with coming in to change the rain tires and stuff.
Oh, what a mess. What a mess. What'd you think about the situation at Three Rivers where they delayed the start of the race to wait for Depailler? Gave him the extra warm-up laps in the other car. Well, I can see their point. I mean, they brought him over, the crowd wanted to see him, etc. But, okay, if it had been you that had blown your engine in the warm-up, you would have been sitting in the pits watching the cars start the race. Or if it had been anyone else except any of the Formula One guys.
Yeah, you know, I kind of take a situation like that with mixed emotions. Number one, I knew from past experience at Three Rivers that there's a lot of unorganization going on. In 74, they were announcing the qualifying sessions in French, and we'd all be sitting in the garage and find out that the qualifying session had just ended. And, you know, we had to petition for an extra session and stuff like this. It was just horrible. But as far as the situation this year, number one, I expected unorganization, so it didn't surprise me. Number two, I kind of reckon that, you know, of all the people there, Depailler's paid his dues. And he probably deserves a break. And number three, the promoters have to make the race a success. And if having Depailler run makes it a success, you know, I feel that I owe it to the promoters to put up with, you know, it wasn't really an inconvenience. I mean, it gave me a little time to relax and have a cigarette before the race started.
Then that situation in the race where the red flag was mistakenly displayed because of a mix-up in the language. Now, I was over on at the end of the straight where you were off, and the corner workers were talking there, said someone over in the last turn accidentally misunderstood instructions and displayed a red flag, and when the starter saw that, he displayed red and ordered red displayed around the whole circuit because no, you know, no one knew what was going on. Now, a situation like that can be dangerous because I was over on the back straight then where, in well, I think three or four cars coming through. I don't know if you were in that group or not. And were you over there when Gibson hit the rail?
Yeah.
And he was mad as hell when he said half a dozen cars passed him under waving red and yellow flags and because a car had just gone by there and blown an engine. And he went then out of the way to let everybody by and he hit the oil and went into the rail. And he said, if you guys don't get this crap straightened out, I just won't come back here next year.
Well, you know,
that was just a...
It was a bad news situation. Yeah. There's not two ways
could have been. It could have been a lot worse than it was. It could have been...
Yeah, fortunately, I was in a good position because when they threw the red flag in the hairpin, they threw it from about a third place back. So I was the fourth car into the area. And there were only three cars in front of me. And I jumped on the brakes and managed to come to a stop without hitting anybody. And we were all out of our cars while cars were still coming up. And there was a good buffer zone of about 20 cars between me and the guys that were barreling in. But,
what did you think when you saw the red? Had you passed the accident the
first
turn?
Yeah, I passed the accident a couple of times.
Was the track pretty well blocked there?
No, it wasn't too bad. There were two lanes through the accident. They were pretty safe. But I figured that someone had collected one of the wrecked cars.
How you doing?
Pretty good. You taking off?
No, time is it. Seb's getting tired. He's been up since just about 3
really. About 10 of 11. I reckon that someone had collected one of the wrecked cars and actually blocked the track. So I figured it was a legit thing. But I thought that they should have given us a little bit of advance warning, you know, rather than having the red right as you come out of a blind turn.
So you didn't see it any time before you
no.
came there?
No. It just came around that last turn.
There was.
And I was right. Howdy Holmes and Jassoud were right breathing up the back of my car, and I was chasing Dolhem and Ray Hall. And all of us were in a tight bunch, and we went barreling in. And all of a sudden, there were corner workers shoulder to shoulder across the track throwing red flags. And, you know, of course, all of us got out of our cars, and there was a lot of helmet throwing and stomping around and stuff like that.
See.
But, you know, that's a bad that's one of the bad situations in Canada that we run into a lot is inexperienced workers I crashed the car in Gimli pretty heavily. It was in a really bad rainstorm. And I was running about 6th, and Villeneuve was leading the race by a lot, just flying. And he came up to lap me. And the spray was so bad that when you left the corner onto the straightaway, you just kind of counted. And when you got to 9 or 10, you reckoned it was time to slow down because you couldn't see anything. And I backed off, and he was right behind me, and he hit me and lifted the car up in the air, and I came down on the Armco. And there were two corner workers standing behind the Armco, and they were standing with their backs to the oncoming traffic. In fact, someone told me they were sitting on the guardrail. And both of them are in the hospital, and one of them's still in the hospital and expects to be in, you know, he's been in the hospital for 2 months now.
You got out of that, right?
Yeah, I got out with a twisted knee and a pretty badly bruised foot, and the car was a write-off. But,
Has that been your worst racing accident?
That and the one where I wrecked the car up in England at Brands Hatch. But, there was a lot of goings-on about the inexperience of the corner workers after that incident because they never should have been standing with their backs to the oncoming traffic.
Leaning on it.
Right, exactly.
In a rainstorm.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a constant problem we run into with race organization. Rob Tanner does a superhuman job in the series up there, training the people at the tracks. But you know, it's a lot like what I would expect to run into in some of the smaller tracks in Europe, where you get crowd, you know, inadequate crowd control, people running back and forth across the track, like what's happening a lot at Three Rivers. Mm-hmm. You know, during qualifying, I'd come screaming around a turn, and there'd be a bunch of people crossing the track, you know, with coolers and stuff. You know? But same, we went to St. John's Newfoundland last year, and we ran through the streets, and they never had a race there.
They never had a race there before.
No, and you know, when we went out for our first session, you know, we were, you know, a lot of us always go out together and try and run together during practice and qualifying to build up speed. And there was a pack of three or four of us running along, and, you know, we were passing, you know, couples walking with their little kid and a cooler full of beer and some folding chairs along the side of the track. You know? And we just scream right past them.
Oh, boy.
You know, I think...
How much can you actually see when you're, you know, when you're concentrating on your driving, the places where you can...
A lot.
See people in the crowd, pick out photographers or corner workers or...
A whole lot. You know, it's kind of a sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Your attention is kind of like buckshot at certain times, you know. Sometimes you're directly just on the pavement, and sometimes, you know, you can see a whole crowd and you just pick out one little... something in the crowd that happens to catch your eye, you know, and next time it might be something else. You know, you pretty much, you know, at a state of total awareness, you know, and you kind of scan the area, and at different points in time, different things will catch your eye. But there's not, you know, like a lot of times when I'm running, I'll be dicing with the car, and I won't even know who it was I was racing with after the race. But I'll remember the photographer that was standing by the turn taking the pictures, you know, like I was standing there with him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's this weird...
Your attention's...
When you're concentrating that much, it's weird what you'll pick up.
How do you prepare yourself before a race, before the concentration? Now, one fellow I know, McGee, seems to be in a total state of relaxation the entire weekend. The guy kids around with everybody, hops into the car and goes out there and drives his ass off, you know. How do you get ready to go out and drive?
In the 2 years I've been running the Players Series, or Atlantic cars, I've tried all different kinds. You know, I'm pretty athletic anyway. I play semi-pro hockey, play a lot of handball and tennis and stuff. And, you know, I stay active. I ride motorcycles a lot, sort of a hangover from when I used to race. So I figure that as long as I stay active, that takes care of the keeping in shape part of things. And I've tried not drinking for a week leading up to the race. when I first started racing, I used to get drunk at 4 in the morning before the race. And, you know, I've been all up and down the spectrum, and really, you just have to naturally learn to relax. And if you can do it by not drinking, if you can do it by drinking, if you can do it by sleeping, if you can not do it by sleeping, you know, whatever's best for your personal, you know, character makeup is the best way to go. You know, right now I'm at, you know, over the weekend I moderate, you know, I make sure I get sleep. If I go out with some people, I might have, if I go out to the bar, I'll have a beer or two. If I go out to dinner with some people, I might have a glass of wine, but I make sure, you know, I don't wake up with a hangover or anything. You know, really it's a matter of confidence while you're driving. And if you can have the confidence that all of your senses are going to be keen after having drank for a night, then that's cool. But, you know, if you feel like you're going to...
What's most satisfying to you about road racing, about driving cars? What's the most personally satisfying thing about the driving itself?
Most personally satisfying, I think it's probably stems from the people in the player series, in the Atlantic series, I consider to be really good group of people. And if I can gain their respect by doing well, you know, then that's probably the most satisfying to me. You know, like this past weekend, even though I shunted the car after the race, you know, a lot of people came up to me and said that, you know, while I was running seventh, you know, there was only one or two other people from North America that were running up with the European drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And that they thought, you know, that I was doing a really impressive job. And, you know, when people like Ray Wardell, who's manager of the March Factory, or Bill Scott, or Fred Oberg, or people like that, you know, come up and say that, you know, they reckon that, you know, you're one of the top drivers in the series, which I consider to be the top series in the States, you know, that's probably it. You know, like this year, I've gone to a couple of nationals. I've gone to 3 nationals, and I've won all 3. And in 2 of them, I set lap records, and in 1 of them, I set an outright lap record. And, you know, I might as well have just been, going for a drive downtown to pick up a case of beer or something, you know. It really didn't do anything for me. But in the player series, if I run 5th, 6th, 7th, with people who are known to be amongst the top drivers in the world, you know, then that really turns me on. I think probably the biggest satisfaction is getting the respect of the people involved in the Atlantic series.
It seems to be, you're racing against most of the same people all season long.
Right.
So everyone gets an opportunity to observe everyone else driving and everybody else's habits. And
right.
It seems to be a pretty close-knit group of people.
Yeah, it's a really close-knit group of people, you know, and there's a group in the United States, you know, of young drivers that are kind of what I consider to be on their way up, you know, and it's people like Forbes Robinson and Freddie Phillips, who wasn't at Three Rivers, and Howdy Holmes, and Villeneuve, and Klausler, and Ray Hall. And, you know, if I'm considered to be in a group of people like that, you know, then that's, you know, a lot of satisfaction. You know, I'm young enough and I got enough time where, you know, I can concentrate on winning races, you know, in a year or two. But right now, just to be, I'm really pleased with where I'm at for the amount of experience that I've had.
Pretty impressive so far. I mean, just being a couple of years into racing, to be running where you're at,
yeah,
in the series you're running, which is so competitive.
Right.
To be running so near the top of this series. Because, well, like in American racing, it would be, you can see it in American racing. You can see it in Group 5000 racing. There's not the... The driver shows up, he drives the car and he leaves. Alan Unser talks to Mario. Redmond talks to Alan. And then all the guys struggling on their own talk to each other. You know, it's a total class separation.
Yeah.
Groups of people.
Yeah, and you know, like I was interested in running some 5,000 races this year. And I came close to running Mid-Ohio. I came really close to running Long Beach. I had a good sponsor and a good car lined up. But I kind of put it off after I saw BJ's accident in Mid-Ohio. Conceivably, I might do the last two 5,000 races. For sure, I'm going to do some Super B races just to sort of keep it warm. But when I go to a 5,000 race, when I see people like Woodner and Bernd Schuben and Forbes Robinson, people that I run against every weekend in the Player Series, and I know how I do against